The views and opinions expressed here are those of the guests and are not the official position of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
This is Faith in Action, featuring discussions on how the gospel can help us become more spiritually and temporally self-reliant. In this episode, we're going to be speaking with Ronald and Sandra Bean, who recently returned from a humanitarian mission to Uganda. Brother and Sister Bean, a belated welcome home.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
How was your mission to Uganda?
Absolutely wonderful. We not only had a good time, but the humbling experience of helping people that really needed help is a highlight of our life.
Well, it may seem just a little strange in these tough times that we're focusing on missionary service and helping others, but service is such an important part of developing true Christ-centered self-reliance. Brother and Sister Bean, tell us a little bit about a humanitarian mission service. What does that include?
This is how the church works through the process of helping people to help themselves. And we do it mainly through working with NGOs, that's a non-government organization, and community-based organizations, or just groups of people. And those organizations need to be helping people to help themselves, because we will not always be there. And, of course, we're released in time. But we really need to have an organization that will follow up and plan and help and be there to make sure the organization is sustained and will truly help people.
Our goal really was to implement a well-defined plan and to encourage the participants to work and choose projects that were sustainable that would really help them in the future.
Sister Bean, explain a little bit about how you went about getting your call. What did you have to do?
Well, we first of all discussed between ourselves that we really wanted to go on a mission, and we first looked through the blue sheets that the church publishes. I don't know how many people know that there are blue sheets that tells what missions are available and what the responsibilities are, and of course we prayed for guidance and decided that we would just want go in there and not specify what we wanted to do, but would just kind of let the Lord decide. We met with our bishop and told him of our desires and filled out the paperwork, and then met with our stake president, who is our son, and he encouraged us to put in for an 18-month mission and filled out the forms and sent to Salt Lake.
And then you got your call, and what happened when you opened up your call?
We were so anxious. We had decided that neither one of us could go to the mailbox without the other one. And there it was. There was a letter, and we were just so anxious, and it was so thrilling to read that we were being called as the humanitarian directors for the country of Uganda. We laughed and we cried and we were so excited, and I guess a million thoughts went through our minds. We called our son first, and then we called all of our family and friends and cried on the phone. We had several months to do all the things you need to prepare for it, but we wanted to learn all about the country and the people, and most of all, what does a humanitarian director do?
Right.
It's interesting that you're waiting and you're very anxious to find out where you're going to go, and then once you get it, you're kind of a little bit scared opening up because you're not sure.
Sure.
You know, so you just kind of stand there for a while and look at it and say, okay, let's do it. But we did put on the application, at least I did, that I wanted to be busy and go someplace where I could make a difference. So that was the exciting part of receiving the call to be a humanitarian director.
I can only imagine how busy you were in Uganda. One of the things that I heard that you did, which just fascinated me, was that you did a pineapple project. Could you explain that?
It was one of our most successful projects. Rose was a very small and a thin African woman, and she came to our office, and she was dressed in very colorful clothing, and she had this little baby on her back. And she had represented 98 women in a small village named Chikwanda. It was kind of a typical village way out in the bush, and it consisted of a few humble, small brick buildings, but mostly the people lived in grass and mud huts. And these women had gotten together and combined their resources, very small resources, and had acquired 5 acres of land. They had met and decided that they would like to plant pineapple on this land and had heard that the Church of Jesus Christ might help them. So this project would eventually help approximately 600 people. So we interviewed her, we asked her many questions, and then we agreed to drive out and meet with the women and look at the land. Oh, it was so interesting when we met with these women. It was under a tree in front of one of their houses, and they were so poor. And many were sick with AIDS and other health problems, and there were many, many children. But they had agreed that they would help each other and work in shifts and make this project work.
We then, of course, walked the five-acre field, and this is a field that had been overgrown and not used for many years. So it was tough, and some of them were just walking with bare feet, and Rose, her shoes kept coming off. But I walked the perimeter with all the leaders, and then, of course, Sandra would follow behind. She's a little bit like a Pied Piper, you know, all the children
right. Gather
around her and follow her, and it was great. But it was fun to... And it looked like a very daunting task because of the condition of this 5 acres.
The land was really overgrown with thick brush and trees. It was really a jungle, and we wondered how these frail women could possibly clear it, especially since it would be done by hand with hoes and shovels and pangas. But it looked so good.
And we became convinced that it would be a really good project. So in working with Rose and going through several times meeting and back and forth of what we could do, wouldn't do, it was decided that we would provide the wire and nails to build a fence around the perimeter. They would do the fencing because we would provide them with a chainsaw to cut down some trees, and that would become the posts. It took 40,000 pineapple suckers to cover 4 acres.
Wow.
I thought that 5 acres was too much, that we would finance doing 4 of the acres. We provided them with hoes and pangas and all the fertilizers and stuff they needed. And it's interesting that part of what we provided them was 10 lorries of coffee husks. That's a ground cover. And, of course, the church wanted to know what I was doing with coffee husks. But that would be our part of doing it. And then what their responsibility was, of course, is to clear the land and prepare the land, build the fences, do the planting, do the harvesting. And the goal of the project was to provide for all their financial needs, the medical fees, the school fees, because they all had, out in these villages, land that could provide substance, food for themselves, but they had no way of making enough money. So they really had... They were destitute as far as anything financial other than taking care of their own needs.
So when it came to clearing the land, did these women, did they just go out and do it themselves? Did they just start pulling weeds and chopping down trees?
Well, most of the work, of course, well, all of the work, I guess, was done by hand with hoes and shovels and pangas, machetes. We just couldn't believe how you could possibly do it with those kind of implements. But...
Some of the work was done by some men. She had a right-hand man that kind of had the expertise on the pineapples, and which I relied on to pretty much help direct Rose and the rest of the women in the project. But they would use the chainsaw to make some money so they could hire some men. So some of the hard labor was performed by men, and some of the planning was actually done by them. But the women, most of the work that's done in Uganda is done by women.
I would say they did 85% of it, maybe 90%. and then hired a few men to help with the really hard work, like cutting down the trees, things like that.
So when you left, obviously it takes a long time to plant and to reap what you sow. But when you left, what was the state of the pineapple field?
Oh, when we left to come home, the pineapple was almost ready to harvest, and there was a very strong market for it. We went out to see Rose and the women the last time, and this is going to make me emotional because it was so wonderful to have seen the field before it got started, when it was just a jungle, and then to see them standing in this field of pineapple that was probably, oh, gosh, way above their knees. And it was just a wonderful experience. Do we have time for me to tell a little side note, a little story about?
Sure.
When I was walking through the field initially, when we first got there to check out the land, I was walking with Rose's boys. There were many children walking along with me, but her boys were walking by the side of me. And I was talking to them about soccer and about, do you play ball? And they were very polite and said, yes, ma'am, and yes, ma'am. And I said, do you love playing soccer? Oh, yes, ma'am. And as we were leaving that day, Rose said to me, thank you for promising my boys a soccer ball. And I was very surprised because I had not made the promise, but we do have a little language barrier. But I was glad that she had told me. And so the next time we went out to check the progress of the project, we brought a soccer ball. And when we drove up to Rose's house, we heard the boys. They were inside. They hollered, it's here, it's here. And they came running out of their house, stark naked. And we handed them the ball, and they immediately started to kick it. Their mother laughed and laughed, and she was so happy to see that her boys were so happy. They had just been using, like, rolled-up banana leaves to have a ball. It was wonderful.
What a great story.
We were so glad we had brought a ball.
And the really good part is I stood them in a game, and I won. But I kept my clothes on.
We're talking with Ron and Sandra Bean. They recently returned from a humanitarian mission to Uganda. We heard about the pineapple project, which I'm sure changed many people's lives. You mentioned 600 people.
Yes.
600 people. But that's not the only project that you worked on. You also worked on water projects while you were in Uganda as well.
That's true.
Tell us a little bit about it.
Let me talk about one that's probably our favorite at this point. We had several different water projects, but in the district of Kamuli, a gentleman by the name of Hannington Kantutu kept coming to the office and telling us about the great needs that he had in his village, that they were having experienced in 8 deaths every single month from water-related illnesses. And he wanted 4 protected springs built, which is a fairly small project when it comes to water. But his plea was so genuine, and the need was there. So we asked for a water expert to come. Brother and Sister Green came, and we did visit the site so we could see if we could help them. We met with the village leaders in the village. It was quite a colorful situation, sitting around in a circle and discussing their great needs. But it was kind of disappointing when we walked the land that the 4 areas that they needed springs were not suitable. They were just, you know, shallow holes in the ground that were filling up with water and could not be developed. But unfortunately, this is water they were using, very contaminated, very bad.
In fact, when we first met with them, they were all just coming from a funeral of another person who had died from a water-related.
Wow. Were they sick? Was the water making them sick?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, they have a lot of incidences of cholera and all kinds of waterborne diseases. There's a huge number of them, and they get sick very quickly and have a problem. They have a hard time boiling water because they don't have facilities like we do. I mean, they're out, they don't have ranges or stoves. They have to cook with charcoal, and that's a hard process. So we determined the only way to help this group was to bore deep boreholes. And we met in time with the water district officer by the name of Charles and the sanitation and hygiene and health engineer by the name of Alex. We love the fact that in Uganda they have English first names. Otherwise, they're hard to pronounce. But thank goodness for that. We determined that we would do 15 new boreholes, and so four of them would be in this village that we wanted to help. But for the whole district, we did 15 new boreholes, and we rehabilitated 35 additional non-working boreholes that in the past had worked, but they lacked the funds and the ability to fix them. In addition, we found out that the schools are having a problem, so we had enough funds to help 10 schools to put catchment systems to catch the rainwater off the roof and then put into large holding tanks, so they wouldn't have to go miles. Understand that water in Uganda, the standard is have water within 1.5 kilometers of people. That's a long walk.
It's about 2 miles?
That's a little over a mile.
A little over a mile.
Each way. And to, you know, to fill a jerry can and walk back. To help with their illness, we decided that less than 50% of the district actually had a latrine. And so they're just using the bush. And this is part of their contamination and illness problems. So we determined that we could construct and build 1,200 latrine slabs. We just pour those and provide 1,200 mosquito nets. And then we would provide all the people there with health and sanitation training. And that was a part of it. That's what we would do. And the people, of course, were required to dig a latrine pit. And they would provide a shelter over the top of it. They had to clear the ground around their huts. We taught them how to build drying racks so they could wash their eating utensils and then dry them outside in the sun, dry refuge and wet refuge bins. And they would go through a training course in hygiene and sanitation. And if they did that, then we would provide them with the latrine slabs and a mosquito net as an incentive to go through that. It's a wonderful, wonderful project.
So needless to say, you were busy during your 18 months.
We were. When we were building the first new borehole, that was very interesting. Most of the villagers came out to watch. It was just a really colorful sight. We were sitting on the ground on a dirt road, clear out in a village surrounded by villagers and their children, and everyone was interested in watching this new borehole being drilled. The rig was set up, and the drillers kept lowering one pipe after another in the ground, and there was still no water. And then they'd put in another pipe and lower down another pipe, and we were getting a little worried that it was a dry hole, that there might not be water there. And all of a sudden, mud and water started shooting into the air, and then finally just clear water shot up. It was exciting and wonderful. I actually got very emotional. Here we were covered with water and mud along with our truck and all the people that were near the rig, and several of the villagers appeared with a big drum, and they started beating on it. Of course, they were telling the people all around the area that water had been discovered. It's sort of like an African cell phone. And the women hugged, and we danced, and they sang, and the drums sounded the news. And it was so exciting. I had to almost pinch myself really sitting there watching this.
What a marvelous story. Let me ask you a tough question. This is kind of tough to answer, but how many people do you think that you, in your 18-month service, how many people do you think that you helped?
With water, with everything.
With everything.
We determined recently, as I went back through my notes and everything, that actually on water and health and sanitation was 200,000 people.
Wow.
That's just the water.
And the various other projects, like the pineapple, we did rice and banana and piggery and cows and all kinds of things that I don't know anything about, but fortunately found people that knew how to make things happen and work through them, just like the water. You really had to help the water district to perform and the sanitation people to perform. And on this project, I had Hannington Kantutu, who was a wonderful, bridge between us and the people who were doing the work. So there was an additional 40,000 people that we helped with the smaller projects, water being the big ones. But it was about 240,000 people overall that we were able to help with this.
Ron, I have a question for you. How do you teach these people? How do you make sure that they maintain these projects?
Well, for instance, on the water sources, each water source, we require them to form a water committee that is given the charge to make sure it's protected and taken care of, and that they... it becomes their water source, and that they would collect a little bit of money so when a chain needed to be repaired or the valve changed, that they had the money to do that, and it would become theirs. Bear in mind, each water source can be serving up to 1,000 people, so they're running an awful lot and get an awful lot of use. The fun part about water part or any project was the handovers, where we officially handed over whatever it was the church was donating. This is kind of it. Sometimes it was the very start of a project, or as it in the water source, generally it was handed over after it was done, where we commissioned a few of the boreholes and did that. But it was always accompanied with a lot of speeches. The Africans love to talk. So you get all the politicians and leaders from LC1, LC3, LC5, district chairman, members of parliament, et cetera, all giving speeches. But a lot of dancing and singing, but they so appreciate what...
Deep appreciation.
Deep appreciation and thankfulness to the church. And it also gave the church a lot of publicity, because we were on television a lot and radio a lot and
newspaper articles
and newspaper prints, and they kept taking pictures of my bad side.
So it also helped, the young missionaries as they proselyted, because most people knew the name of the Church of Jesus Christ, because we had done big water projects and it helped villages, and it really opened the door, I think, for learning about the gospel.
And when you turned it over, they took complete ownership.
That's the point where it's now theirs. We officially have done our part, and we finished, and it's now theirs. And we still ask for follow-up reports on things, and quite often, like in water, there was ongoing training still to be done. And a lot of the work on sanitation and health and some of those issues were ongoing. So it was a very busy time, but we had good people to work with and through.
We're talking to Ron and Sandra Bean. They recently returned from a humanitarian mission to Uganda. We've talked a lot about some of the projects that you've worked on and the help that you were to the people of Uganda. What did you learn, Brother Bean, from your service?
Well, of course, you learn that there's a lot of people that need help, that they need hope. I learned that you really can't help them all. It was a little harder to find organizations that truly are helping people to help themselves. There's a lot of organizations, but not all of them are really truly helping people. So sorting through those was a little bit, daunting. It was wonderful to do it in the Lord's way, though, of helping people to help themselves.
Sister Bean, what would your recommendations be to a couple who may be approaching retirement and thinking about either a proselyting mission or maybe really don't know that much about a humanitarian mission?
I would recommend definitely to do either one, but of course we did humanitarian and we just loved it. It was the most wonderful experience one could ever have. The humanitarian directors that we replaced said to us when we arrived in Uganda, money cannot buy the experiences you're about to have. And I just thought of that so many times when we watched people be helped and the hope in their faces, and it's true. We're changed forever in ways that we cannot even imagine. We are blessed, our family is blessed, and we're still reaping the blessings. Wonderful, wonderful memories, and especially felt so good that we got to see firsthand what the humanitarian program does and watch the proselyting missionaries do so much good and help so many people. It was so rewarding. It is very hard to put into words.
Well, Ron and Sandra, let me just say thank you very much for your service. You are truly members who have faith in action, and we appreciate everything that you've done, and we appreciate you taking the time to tell us a little bit about your mission.
It was our pleasure to do that.
Yes, thank you. We love talking about it.
This is Faith in Action on the Mormon Channel.